Today's case will be about the issue of moral obligation. And just as a review, the issue of moral obligation comes up when someone promises to pay someone for a benefit given to them in the past. So for example, if I had painted your house without any sort of contract, and then a month later you came back and you promised to pay me $5,000 for providing that service, then the issue of moral obligation would arise. In general, courts will not enforce these type of after-the-fact promises. The narrow exceptions to this rule are cases where a promise was made after the statute of limitations has expired, when a contract was previously invalid has since become valid, or when someone promised to pay back a debt that was previously discharged. Okay, let's go into today's case. Today's case is Webb v. McGowan, and it took place in the Court of Appeals of Alabama in 1935. And the purpose of this case is to see differing opinions on the issue of moral obligation. And before we jump into the facts, just want to give another warning. The facts of this case are, again, a little bit gruesome, but not as bad as last time with Harrington. So on one side of this dispute, we have someone who I'm going to call the employee. And then on the other side of the dispute, we have someone who I'm going to call the boss. So an employee is working in this lumber mill. And one of his jobs was to clean the floors of the mill. And the way he did this was by he would drop this massive wooden pine block from some upper level down to the ground floor. And somehow that cleaned up the floors of the mill. I don't know, like, if it just caused a big boom and like caused the sawdust to like shake or something. I don't know. But somehow dropping that big old piece of wood on the floor helped clean the mill. And that was part of one of his daily duties. And then one day, as he was starting to loosen this big old pine block so that it would drop, he saw his boss down below standing exactly where it was going to fall. And so when he saw that, the employee jumped onto and grabbed this massive pine block to kind of to deflect it and to make it swing away as it fell to the floor. And this ended up saving the boss's life, and he was totally unharmed. However, the employee took some damage. He broke his right leg and his right arm, and he also had the heel of his right foot ripped off. And as a result, he was crippled for life. So again, like, really serious injuries. Less than a month later, the boss promised that he would pay him $15 every 2 weeks for the rest of employee's life. And the boss made these payments for almost 9 years, at which point the boss passed away. And then when the boss's inheritors of his estate took over, they stopped making those payments to the employee. And now the employee is suing the inheritors of the estate, saying that these inheritors, they still have an obligation to pay him $15 per week for the rest of his life. So the inheritors of the estate are arguing that, you know, moral obligations don't get enforced. Maybe the boss promised to pay that $15 per week, but doesn't matter. That was just a kind gesture. There's no legal obligation to follow through on that promise, that he made after he'd already received the benefit. While the employee is saying, no, he promised to pay it. He needs to pay it. He has an obligation to continue to pay me that money. Okay, so again, you're the judge. You're in a really tough case, and you've got to decide whether or not you're going to stay true to the rigid rules of moral obligation and not let this employee get his $15 per week and let him, yeah, I won't go into sob story, but you get the point. Or are you going to see maybe there's an exception here? Maybe there is a way where the employee can still continue to get that money. If you're in our Pod Talk group, go ahead and leave a comment and tell me what your ruling is. Okay, let's talk about how the judge ruled. And the judge in this case, maybe to your surprise, said that there is a contract. The inheritors of the boss's estate does have to pay that $15 per week for the rest of employee's life. All right, so what's going on? This case seems just like the previous two cases we just talked about, and it doesn't fit into any of those exceptions of moral obligation. Yet somehow the judge found that there was indeed a moral obligation for the boss to pay. So, okay, first I'm going to tell you just what the judge says. I'll give you his reasoning, and then I'll give you my take on this, and I'll give you the opinion of other people who have written about this. So the judge says that if someone has received a material benefit and then later promises to compensate someone for that benefit, then that's an enforceable promise. And he put a lot of emphasis on this, quote, material benefit. And somehow this, quote, material benefit, it's like a step above just your normal monetary benefits or other type of benefits someone may give to someone else. But like, he isn't totally clear exactly what that distinction is. He's not clear what exactly is a material benefit. My sense was it was just kind of like a really big, serious benefit, like saving someone's life would fall into this category. There's also a concurring opinion in this case by one of the other judges. And I want to read it real quick because I think it shows perhaps some of the trepidation that they may have felt in making this ruling. Quote, "The questions involved in this case are not free from doubt, and perhaps the strict letter of the rule, as stated by judges, though not always in accord, would bar a recovery by plaintiff, or in other words, would prevent the employee from getting paid." Then he quotes another judge who once said, "I do not think that law ought to be separated from justice where it is at most doubtful." Okay, so that's what the judges had to say about it. And you can see, based on what that concurring judge said, they are acknowledging that they're not really going, they're kind of not going by the strict letter of the law here. And maybe to better understand where they're coming from, let's just try to pretend that you are the judge in this case. And I don't mean that in an abstract sense. I mean, like, pretend you are literally sitting in the courtroom in 1935 Alabama, and you see this poor employee who saved another man's life and is now permanently crippled. And then on the other side of this case, you see the inheritors of the boss's estate using the law to get out of having to make this $15 payment every 2 weeks. And this is kind of the epitome of what you would call a hard case, where the strict application of legal rules leads to an outcome that's probably not going to sit well for most people. And at least one of the judges, he acknowledged that this is the case. So what would you actually do? I mean, would you apply that strict letter of the law and deny the employee his biweekly check? You know, obviously it's really tough. But it's a good reminder that, you know, these judges are real people and they're sitting with real disputes that affect, you know, real individuals. And I think this case really helps bring that to life a little bit. Still at the end of the day, there's still some really big logical inconsistencies we've got here. And it probably would be worthwhile to see if we can resolve this case with the other cases that we've already done up to this point. So I'm just going to give you a quick overview of some different perspectives on these cases. So first, the author of the casebook I'm using, he has done his own contracts lectures on Coursera. And his name is Ian Ayers, and he's a professor at Yale Law School. And he actually did a video lecture on both Webb v. McGowan and Mills v. Wyman. And in that video lecture, as I was watching it, he says that one way to distinguish this case from this Webb v. McGowan versus Mills v. Wyman is the material benefit part. He said that the dad in Mills v. Wyman, he sort of got a benefit by having his 25-year-old son being taken care of by the Good Samaritan, but it wasn't like this direct physical benefit that happened here in Webb v. McGowan. Now, that being said, I'm not sure what he would have to say about Harrington. He didn't talk about that, but I'll just put that to the side. He also says that Mills versus Wyman kind of represents the traditional rule, while this Webb v. McGowan represents the more modern rule. So maybe there's a break in the law, and this is just an example of the common law evolving over time. So maybe in modern times, courts are more open to enforcing these type of moral obligations, at least when the facts are this extreme. So that was his way of trying to distinguish between this case and the previous ones we've looked at. So now I'm going to give another explanation, and this one comes from my contracts professor from back in law school. And her name was Allison Morantz, and she teaches at Stanford. And she said the way to distinguish this Webb v. McGowan case from the other cases was the fact that the employee was on the job. He was working for the boss. He was working for this firm. And so when he made this heroic act and saved his boss, because he did it while working, we can assume that he would have expected to be compensated for it. I mean, if he put himself out on the line to save another employee, you would think that the company would pay for whatever damage he took in doing so. Whereas in Harrington versus Taylor, that was just a friend helping out a friend. So that was her. That's how she explained it to us when I was in law school. Okay, so now I'm going to give my personal explanation about how to resolve these cases. So when introducing moral obligation a couple lectures back, I mentioned how we are now stepping into the equity world. And in equity world, the rules are a little bit more loose. And when there's something that seems extremely unjust or out of whack, then judges, they just have more leeway to do something different. And in this Webb v. McGowan case, the judges probably just felt like the situation was particularly unjust, so they went by a different rule. And this kind of goes back to that thought experiment we were thinking about. Just imagine if you were the actual judges in that courtroom and you had to deny the employee his $15 biweekly check. You know, that's going to be tough. And it's equity world, so maybe we can bend the rules this time. So those are some different perspectives about how to resolve these cases. You may be curious on what is the actual rule here? What do I go by? And the honest answer to that is I can't give you a 100% confident answer. I did the best I could with my research, and my understanding, from the best I can tell, is that the rule is basically the one that I stated at the beginning of this episode. You know, promises for a past benefit are not enforceable unless it falls into one of those three exceptions. Now, if the situation seems to be particularly unjust, like in this case, then perhaps in some courts, like in Alabama, you could still get the promise enforced. So I know this episode probably went a little bit long, but I think it's good to see how the law can be ambiguous sometimes, how courts can disagree with each other, how things can get kind of messy. And I think it's worthwhile to try and see if you can resolve apparent inconsistencies in different rulings. So that's all for this episode. I will talk to you next time.